The Great Second Advent Movement by J.N. Loughborough, Chapter 20, Sacrifices in the Early Work. Gather my saints together unto me, those that have made a covenant with me by sacrifice, and the heavens shall declare his righteousness, for God is judge himself. Psalms 50, verses 5 and 6. In the Review and Herald of June 3, 1902, we read, quote, those who enter the work at the present time know comparatively little of the self-denial and self-sacrifice of those upon whom the Lord laid the burden of his work at its beginning. The experience of the past should be told them again and again, for they are to carry forward the work with the same humility and self-sacrifice that characterized the true workers in the past. Close quote. Again, in the Testimonies for the Church, Volume 7, these words are found, quote, we are nearing the end of this earth's history, and the different lines of God's work are to be carried forward with much more self-sacrifice than has yet been manifested. Close quote, page 240. The circumstances under which Elder Bates was moved out in 1845 to write and publish his first book on the Sabbath question have already been referred to. Also, reference has been made to the trying situation of Elder James White when, in 1849, he began the publication of the paper called The Present Truth, a pamphlet on the opening heavens. After the vision given to Mrs. White in Topsheng, Maine, in the fall of 1846, when some of the planets were shown her, Elder Bates prepared the manuscript for a pamphlet on the opening heavens. But ready means for its publication was greatly needed. To meet this demand, a sister residing in Massachusetts, who had just completed and laid a new red carpet, took it up and sold it, and gave the proceeds to Elder Bates, which enabled him to publish his second book, a pamphlet on the ceiling work. After the view of the ceiling work given in Dorchester, Massachusetts, November 18, 1848, Elder Bates wrote a third pamphlet entitled A Seal of the Living God. Here again, he was confronted with the problem of no money for printing. A young widow, learning of the situation, sold a small home which she possessed in the country and gave to Elder Bates half of the amount she received for it. Thus was he again enabled to pay for the printing of a book. Demands of the publishing work. In 1851 to 1852, the Advent Review and Sabbath Herald was printed at Saratoga Springs, New York. Here Mr. Thompson furnished Elder White and his wife house room free, and with borrowed furniture, they were again privileged to set up housekeeping. At this time, believers in the present truth were increasing, and with this increase, there was a demand for the personal labors of Elder and Mrs. White. This, with the work of editing, created a demand for office help. Just at that time, others were impressed to assist in the literary work. As an illustration of how the Lord works in response to the faith of his people and raises up workers in the time of need, we give the experience of a devoted sister, Mrs. Rebecca Smith of West Wilton, New Hampshire. After the passing of time, her son Uriah and daughter Annie R. desired greatly to attend school that they might fit themselves for teaching. The mother feared the children were drifting away to the world, and in fact, her fears were not wholly groundless. The parental love of the mother was reciprocated by the children. Uriah Smith at Phillips's Academy. From 1848 to 1851, the son attended Phillips's Academy in Exeter, New Hampshire, where the students were taken through the first year of a college course, so that on entering college, they would be 1 year in advance. This course he finished. In 1851, he labored to earn money with which to attend college, But as his employer failed in business, he lost his money, and in consequence, the long-cherished plan of a college course was abandoned. Miss Smith at a ladies' seminary. While Uriah was at the academy, his sister was attending a young ladies' seminary in Charleston Town, Massachusetts. Her course there was nearly finished, and as she was soon to leave school, an offer was made to herself and her brother to teach in an academy at Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, for 3 years at $1,000 a year with room and board. About this time, the mother embraced present truth. Her prayers were now, if possible, more earnest and fervent than ever in behalf of her children. Elder Bates visited West Wilton, and before him Mrs. Smith laid the case of her children, and their conversion was made a subject of prayer. Elder Bates was expecting in a few days to hold meetings in Somerville, Massachusetts, at the house of Paul Folsom, and Mrs. Smith was to write to her daughter, inviting her to attend the meeting. In the meantime, Elder Bates and the mother were to pray that God would move upon her heart to go to the meeting. Two dreams fulfilled. Elder Bates had never been in the room where the meeting was to be held, and therefore knew nothing of its situation. The night before the meeting, he dreamed of being in the room, and that every seat was occupied except the one just by the door. He also dreamed that he changed his subject from that on which he intended to speak and spoke on the sanctuary question that they had sung the first hymn, prayed, and sung the second hymn, and he had just opened his Bible and was reading, "Unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed," pointing to the figure of the sanctuary on the chart, when the door opened, and a young lady entered and took her seat in the vacant chair. He also dreamed that the person was Annie R. Smith, and that she at once became interested and embraced the truth. Elder Bates's meeting was on the Sabbath, Saturday. As there was no school that day, Annie said, "Just to please my mother, I'll go." The night before that Sabbath, she dreamed that she went and was late, that on arriving at the door, the first hymn had been sung, prayer offered, and they were just concluding the second hymn, that as she entered, she observed that every chair was occupied but the one by the door, that a tall, noble, pleasant speaker was pointing to a chart such as she had never seen before and was repeating, "Unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed." She dreamed that what he said greatly interested her and that it was the truth. She started for the meeting in ample time, but missed the way, so failed to get there until the singing of the last of the second hymn. When she entered, everything was exactly as she had seen it in the dream, and the identical man of her dream was repeating in the same manner the text from Daniel 8:14. It struck conviction to her heart at once. Elder Bates had not thought of his dream until she entered the door and took her seat. He had prepared to talk on another subject, but his mind would rest on the sanctuary question. While he was repeating the text, his dream flashed into his mind, and silently he prayed for help to speak to the hearts of his hearers. He had great freedom in explaining the passing of the time with which Annie was familiar. Then he set forth the truth of the third angel's message and the Sabbath. Annie Smith accepts the truth. As he closed the meeting, he stepped up to Annie and said, quote, "I believe this is Sister Smith's daughter of West Wilton. I never saw you before, but your countenance looks familiar. I dreamed of seeing you last night," close quote. Then Annie told her dream. She left the meeting with feelings and aspirations all changed, having there and then accepted the truth of the Sabbath. She went back to the seminary, packed her trunk, and went home. On learning of Elder White's cares in publishing and of his labors in preaching, she felt that God called her to go and help him in his office work. In August 1851, when the paper was moved from Paris to Saratoga Springs, New York, Miss Smith was there as one of the workers. A sacrifice and a consecration. In the review, Volume 2, Number 7, are a few lines from her pen expressing her feelings after having given up her former plans for her humble, unpretentious work. She says, quote, "I trust I have forsaken all to follow the Lamb, whatsoever he leads the way. Earth has entirely lost its attractions. My hopes, joys, affections are now all centered in things above and divine. I want no other place than to sit at the feet of Jesus and learn of Him. No other occupation than to be in the service of my Heavenly Father. No other delight than the peace of God, which passes all understanding." Close quote. Sister Annie's help in the office as proofreader, etc., was timely. For 3 years, she labored faithfully and effectively, receiving only board and clothing. At the end of this period, consumption had marked her for its victim. During the ravages of this lingering and fatal disease, she wrote some beautiful poems, the sweetest of all being Home Here and Home in Heaven, the preface to which, written the day before her death on July 26, 1855, so well expresses the graces of simplicity and humility so largely developed in her character that we cannot refrain from giving it in full. Quote, "I thank my God that while below, this pleasing task to me was given. And when my numbers ceased to flow, I bent the knee and looked to heaven. Let none this humble work assail, its failings to expose to view, which sprung within misfortune's veil, and neath the dews of sorrow grew." Close quote. Housekeeping under difficulties. In April 1852, Elder White moved from Saratoga Springs to Rochester, New York. It was in this city at 124 Mount Hope Avenue that they, for the first time, set up housekeeping with articles purchased instead of borrowed. But such was their anxiety to make the publishing work a success in order that the paper might be regularly published and thus the truth be spread abroad, that they denied themselves of many of the common comforts of life. The manner in which they began housekeeping at this time, you can read in the following private letter written by Mrs. White to S. Howland's family, April 16, 1852. Quote, "We are just getting settled here in Rochester. We have rented an old house for $175 a year. We have the press in the house. Were it not for this, we should have to pay $50 a year for office room. You would smile could you look in upon us and see our furniture. We have bought two old bedsteads for 25 cents each. My husband brought me six old chairs, no two of them alike, for which he paid $1, and soon he presented me with four more old chairs, without any seating, for which he paid 62 cents for the lot. The frames were strong, and I have been seating them with drilling. Butter is so high, we do not purchase it, neither can we afford potatoes. We use fruit sauce in the place of butter and turnips for potatoes. Our first meals were taken on a fireboard placed upon two empty flour barrels. We are willing to endure privations if the work of God can be advanced. We believe the Lord's hand was in our coming to this place. There is a large field for labor and few laborers. Last Sabbath, our meeting was excellent. The Lord refreshed with his presence. Close quote. Liberality of the Believers. In the first number of the Review, printed in Rochester, May 6, 1852, speaking of the removal from Saratoga to Rochester, Elder White said, quote, "The brethren have provided means to sustain the paper beyond our expectations. And although our expenses in moving from Saratoga Springs and commencing the paper in this city have been considerable, yet we are free from debt." Close quote. Sacrifice of the Laborers. In a business note in number 12, October 14, we read, quote, "The office is not in debt. However, for this reason, Brother Belden and Stowell, who have worked in the office the past 6 months, have received but a trifle more than their board. Others engaged in the same work have received no more than they have. It will certainly be a pleasure for all the friends of the present truth to help make up the deficiency in the receipts that those who have labored hard, especially in our absence, in the midst of sickness, in publishing the Review and Herald, may have comfortable support." Close quote. Accessions in Rochester, New York. During the summer of 1852, when the publishing work was fairly started in Rochester, Elder White and his wife took a 3 months trip with horse and carriage as far east as Bangor, Maine, holding meetings and visiting scattered Sabbath keepers on the way. Before their return, beginning September 26, Elder J.N. Andrews gave a series of discourses at 124 Mount Hope Avenue. At this time, 8 first-day Adventists accepted present truth, the writer being one of the number. Oswald Stowell healed. On Friday evening in October, Elder White and his wife arrived home from their Eastern tour. The next day, the Sabbath, we saw them for the first time in the Sabbath meeting. At the time of this meeting, Oswald Stowell, the pressman, was suffering from a very severe attack of pleurisy and had been given up by his physician to die. The doctor said he could do nothing for him. During the service, Oswald was in an adjoining room and in great physical agony. At the close of the meeting, he sent in a request that prayers be offered for him. With others, I was invited to engage in a season of prayer. We bowed by his bedside, and while prayers were being offered, Elder White anointed him with oil in the name of the Lord. There was a sensible presence of the Spirit of God, and he was instantly healed. When we arose from prayer, he was sitting up in bed, striking his sides, which before had been so painful, and saying, "I am fully healed. I shall be able to work the hand press tomorrow." 2 days after this, he did work it. Mrs. White's vision before the Rochester Company. The same blessing that healed Brother Stowell fell in still greater measure upon Mrs. White. And as Elder White turned to look at her, he said, quote, "Ellen is in vision. She does not breathe while in this condition. If any of you desire to satisfy yourselves of this fact, you are at liberty to examine her." Close quote. She remained thus in vision about 1 hour and 20 minutes. While in that condition, she spoke words and sometimes distinct sentences, yet by the closest scrutiny, no breath could be discerned in her body. Vision on the course of an absent member. After Mrs. White came out of this vision, she bore testimony as to what she had seen. Before the return of Elder White and his wife from their eastern journey, one of our number had left the city and was traveling on business in the state of Michigan. He was not, therefore, present at this meeting and had never seen Elder White or his wife. In relating her vision, Mrs. White told us, among other things, what she saw concerning a man who, while he was traveling and away from home, had much to say about the law of God and the Sabbath, but was at the same time breaking one of the commandments. She said he was a person whom she had never met, yet she believed she would see him sometime, as his case had been unfolded to her. Not one of our number, however, supposed him to be anyone with whom we were acquainted. About 6 weeks from the time of the above vision, the brother previously mentioned returned from Michigan. As soon as Mrs. White looked upon his countenance, she said to one of the sisters, quote, "That is the man I saw in the vision of whom I told you," close quote. The vision, being related to this brother in the presence of his wife and several other persons, Mrs. White said to him, quote, "As Nathan said to David, thou art the man," close quote. He then did just what Paul said some persons would do when reproved for their sins by the gift of prophecy. But if all prophecy, and there came in one that believeth not, or one unlearned, he is convinced of all, he is judged of all, and thus are the secrets of his heart made manifest, and so, falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that God is in you of a truth. 1 Corinthians 14, verses 24 and 25. After listening to the rehearsal of his wrongdoings by Mrs. White, this brother dropped upon his knees before his wife, and with tears said to her and to the few present, "God is with you of a truth," and then made a full confession of his course while in Michigan in violating the seventh commandment, as revealed at the time of its occurrence, over 500 miles away. Thus, a few weeks' time gave us strong confirmation of the testimonies. Not only were we led to say that they were produced by some supernatural power, but that they were from a source in which no uncertain terms reproved men for sin. Uriah Smith connects with the Review Office. It was during the publication of Volume 3 of the Review that Uriah Smith began the observance of the Sabbath and became connected with the Review Office, in which he was writer and editor for so many long years. His first production published in the paper was a poem entitled "The Warning Voice of Time and Prophecy," which appeared March 17, 1853. Elder Smith first heard the third angel's message at a conference held in Washington, New Hampshire, September 10 to 12, 1852. Returning home to West Wilton, he carefully studied what he had heard and began the observance of the seventh day, the first Sabbath, in December 1852. He became connected with the Review Office in Rochester, New York, May 3, 1853, where he and his sister Annie labored for their board and clothing instead of teaching in an academy for $1,000 per year in their board. Such were, in kind, some of the sacrifices made to establish the work of the third angel's message in its early days. Ordained a minister. About the year 1863, Elder Smith began to exercise his gift in public speaking. In 1866, he was ordained as a minister of the gospel, after which time he labored much in camp meetings and conferences in the various states from the Atlantic to the Pacific, as well as in pastoral labors in the Battle Creek Church, which was his home church. After the opening of the Battle Creek College, he taught more or less in the biblical department of that institution. In the interest of the Review and Herald, he crossed the Atlantic Ocean in the year 1894, visiting different countries in Europe. While in Syria, he contracted a fever from the effects of which he never fully recovered. 50 years of untiring labor. From 1853 to 1903, half a century, Elder Smith had an almost constant editorial connection with the Advent Review and Sabbath Herald. And for a greater part of that time, he had the entire editorial management of the paper. Even on the day of his death, when smitten down by a paralytic stroke, he was on his way to the office with matter which he had prepared for print. He also contributed several important volumes to the literature of the denomination. Among these works are Thoughts on Daniel and the Revelation, Nature and Destiny of Man, and an enlarged volume on the Sanctuary and 2300 Days, The Marvel of the Nations, Modern Spiritualism. The first of these volumes was mostly written between the hours of 9 o'clock p.m. and midnight after the day's editorial and office work was completed. Elder Smith's death. His was a useful life well spent. He rests from his labors, having fallen asleep in Jesus, March 6, 1903. But of him, it can be truly said, his works follow him, and though dead, he yet speaketh. This is the end of chapter 20.